The scripture from the Hebrew Bible is Genesis 25, 19 to 34. You may recall last week we heard about the process of finding a suitable wife for Abraham's son Isaac. Today we hear about their twins and the rivalry in their relationship. Isaac was the son of Abraham, and he was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel. She was also the sister of Laban, the Aramean from northern Syria. Almost 20 years later, Rebekah still had no children. So Isaac asked the Lord to let her have a child, and the Lord answered his prayer. Before Rebekah gave birth, she knew she was going to have twins because she could feel them inside her, fighting each other. She thought, "Why is this happening to me?" Finally, she asked the Lord why her twins were fighting, and God told her, "Your sons will become two separate nations. The younger of the two will be stronger, and the older son will be his servant." When Rebekah gave birth, the first baby was covered with red hair, so he was named Esau. The second baby grabbed onto his brother's heel, so they named him Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when they were born. As Jacob and Esau grew older, Esau liked the outdoors and became a good hunter, while Jacob settled down and became a shepherd. Esau would take the meat of wild animals to his father Isaac, and so Isaac loved him more. But Jacob was his mother's favorite son. One day, Jacob was cooking some stew when Esau came home hungry and said, "I'm starving to death. Give me some of that red stew right away." That's how Esau got the name Edom. Jacob replied, "Sell me your rights as the firstborn son." "I'm about to die," Esau answered. "What good will those rights do me?" But Jacob said, "Promise me your birthrights here and now." And that's what Esau did. Jacob then gave Esau some bread and some of the bean stew. And when Esau had finished eating and drinking, he just got up and left, showing how little he thought of his rights as the firstborn. And in the Gospels today, we're reading from Matthew 13, 1 to 9, and then 18 to 23. That same day, Jesus left the house and went out beside Lake Galilee. Such large crowds gathered round him that he had to sit in a boat while the people stood on the shore. Then he taught them many things by using parables. He said, "A farmer went out to scatter seed in a field. When the farmer was scattering seed, some of it fell along the road and was eaten by birds. Other seeds fell on thin, rocky ground and quickly started growing because the soil wasn't deep. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and dried up because they didn't have enough roots. Some other seeds fell where thorn bushes grew up and choked the plants. But a few seeds did fall on good ground, where the plants produced 100 or 60 or 30 times as much as was scattered. If you have ears, pay attention." And starting at verse 18, "Now listen to the meaning of the parable about the farmer. The seeds that fell along the road are the people who hear the message about the kingdom, but don't understand it. Then the evil one comes and snatches the message from their hearts. The seeds that fell on rocky ground are the people who gladly hear the message and accept it right away, but they don't have deep roots and they don't last very long. As soon as life gets hard or the message gets them in trouble, they give up. The seeds that fell among the thorn bushes are also people who hear the message, but they start worrying about the needs of this life and are fooled by the desire to get rich. So the message gets choked out, and they never produce anything. The seeds that fell on good ground are the people who hear and understand the message, they produce as much as 100 or 60 or 30 times what was planted. May God bless us in the hearing of these words.
So this morning's reading from the book of Genesis is part of the saga of Abraham's line and the stories of flawed personalities that are part of it. As we heard, for God's promise to Abraham to come true, Rebecca has to have a child. She, like Sarah, has been barren, but at this point in the story, God hears Isaac's prayer and Rebecca conceives with twins. The twins are antagonists from the time of their conception. And when Rebecca prays that the unrest in her womb might stop, God answers that these children will always be divided and that the oldest child shall serve the younger. For the Hebrews in exile, this story of the reversal of what is normal in that society then reassured them that God is with the least, not the powerful. Yet Jacob could hardly be considered the least. When the rubber hits the road, he takes full advantage of Esau's weakness in order to gain Esau's birthright. So this story is just the beginning of a series of incidents in which Jacob manipulates circumstances and people for his personal gain. This is another human story. The people and the incidences are so messy and real. The favoritism for one child over another, the uneasy relationship between siblings, poor decision-making, and lack of insight or long sight, opportunism for self-gain create divisions that can carry into generations long after the time of their origin. Many of the conflicts and war we see today are intergenerational, and there remains long-time hurts associated with colonization and the removal of land from indigenous peoples. We know this as we seek to live out right relationships with our Aboriginal sisters and brothers. However, in all of this, Rebecca knew, and we know, there is God, always present, and perhaps especially in that which is divided. God's love stands steadfast, and we are reminded that nothing can separate us from the love of God. So then we might wonder, how does this story relate to the gospel reading, the parable of the sower? And as I said before, such a familiar story, another one that we might dismiss listening attentively to, thinking, I've heard this before, I know it. Allison McKenzie, whose work and writing I admire, writes about this story. She says, quote, "When my son Matt, who is now 22, was growing up, I would read him Bible passages every night. We read through Proverbs. We read through Psalms. We read through the Hebrew scriptures or Old Testament stories. And we read through the parables. And I remember a comment he would make every now and then when we would return to a familiar passage. I've heard that one before. Let's hear something we haven't heard before. We have heard the parable of the sower before, many, many times. So let's try to hear something in this well-known, well-worn text that we haven't heard before. You know how you often only think of what would have been good to say after the fact? Well, in retrospect, to rekindle my son's interest in the parable of the sower, I should have talked about rebranding. Rebranding is the act of repackaging and renaming a product to make it more appealing. In technical terms, it is the creation of a new name, term, symbol, design, or a combination of them for an established brand with the intention of developing a differentiated or new position in the mind of the stakeholders and competitors." End of the quote. And then she goes on to cite some dramatic examples of rebranding in recent years, renaming prunes to dried plums. Anybody seen that? Well, it was new to me. Other examples include the morphing of Backrub to Google. Did anybody know that? Freediskspace.com to MySpace.com. Diet Deluxe to Healthy Choice. Radar Oven to Microwave. And Diet Dr. Pepper to Dr. Pepper Light. And it still has aspartame in it. So perhaps we need to look at some rebranding of this story to help us gain new insight into its meaning. The parable describes three failures of sowing. The seed on the path is eaten by birds. The seed sown on rocky ground is scorched by the sun because it has no roots. And the seed sown among the thorns is choked. Some of the seeds fall on good soil and bring forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. So in the first 9 verses, it sounds like Jesus is referring to himself as the sower and the seeds as his teachings. We could also interpret God as the sower, since God is the source of Jesus' teachings. Jesus is a careless, extravagant sower. Why would he let his teachings fall on the path on rocky or thorny ground? If we are to model our own sowing after this sower, we will share Jesus' teachings extravagantly and indiscriminately, not judging which people and places are worthy of them and which are not. So when we go out to share our faith, do it extravagantly and don't judge who we're talking to. Just let it go. Maybe the parable of the sower is not the best or the least, or at least the only brand name for this parable. The sower is mentioned only briefly when he or she scatters the seed in a careless, haphazard manner. He or she does not return to rejoice in the harvest or to harvest it. Recent interpreters have speculated about the action of the sower in scattering seed without discrimination across a variety of soils. The random sowing at least gives the impression that the harvest is somewhat precarious and depends in part on reaching good soil despite an array of obstacles. Huh, how much is life like that? Biblical scholar J. Dominic Crossan emphasizes that it is not so much the size of the harvest that counts, but the fact that the harvest happens at all. However big or small the harvest, against such opposition, there is a miraculous quality to it. It is a gift whose graciousness and surprise are meant to make us think of the realm of God. By his view, we ought to rebrand this parable the parable of the miraculous harvest. For me, the fact that there is a harvest at all provides hope. The hope that which is divided is moving toward being united in the realization of the realm of God. And in the realm of God, when it becomes real, all will be united. The seeds the sower sows have no choice in whether they flourish or not. It's all in the quality of the land they land in. If a bird eats you, you're done for. If the ground you're on is rocky, you wither. If the ground you're on is thorny, you're choked. If conditions are not ideal, you cannot yield a harvest by yourself, by ourselves. And so this is where, for me, this connects to Mrs. Spitzer's garden. She takes those seeds out, she plants them, and she tends them with her whole being. And she understands that some of them need a little different space to grow in, she understands that some are going to look like this and some are going to look like this. And she loves them all into the best they can be. In the Gospel of Mark, the parable concludes with the seed that fell on good soil, yielding an ever-growing harvest. Mark says of the seed that fell on good soil that it grew up and increased and yielded 30 and 60 and 100-fold. Matthew focuses on the fact that the seed that fell on good soil brought forth a harvest of grain, but of varying amounts according to each individual. The success of our sowing depends on the quality of the soil on which it lands, except that in Matthew, it sounds like, even with good soil, some individuals bear more fruit than others. The final verse says, "Let anyone with ears listen." That says, everybody has the ability and potential to be good soil. Have you ever put yourself in this story as the soil? Some ancient texts add the words to hear, which changes the meaning a bit. Let anyone with ears to hear listen. That says not everybody uses those abilities and that potential to be good soil. Because we can hear, but not really listen. Mark's version, written in a time of persecution, focuses on comforting the vulnerable young community. The emphasis is on the miraculous harvest of the seed despite adverse circumstances. Seeds are a good metaphor for encouraging a vulnerable community. They speak of a mysterious reality whose growth occurs without our instigation and often even our knowledge. Matthew, written several decades later to an established but divided community, highlights the need for the individual to bear a harvest from the seed that falls on its soil. The subtle change Matthew makes to Mark's version is in keeping with the larger theological agenda of each gospel. Mark, writing in a time of persecution by Domitian or Nero, emphasizes that though the vulnerable community is not in control of its own destiny, God brings forth a harvest. No matter what, God is always present. Matthew, written later in the first century to a mixed community of Jewish and Gentile Christians, emphasizes the need of each individual to not rest on their religious heritage as Jews or on their freedom from the law as Gentile Christians. Rather, each person needs to be a doer of the word and not only a hearer. And then we move to the second part of the Matthew reading, 18 to 23, and it is often called the allegory of the seeds, but perhaps it is better named the allegory of the soils. An allegory is a story in which each figure and feature actually refers to something else beyond the story. Allegories can be used as a code for oppressed groups to communicate with one another during times of persecution. The word choices and themes of the allegorical explanation of the sower reveal that it is probably the product of the early church. Jesus' initial parable is about how his listeners are to respond to God. The church's added explanation of his parable in verses 18 to 23 reflects how various groups responded to Jesus' teachings about the realm of God. The seed parables point us to hidden realities whose power and activity will one day be revealed. They remind hearers and readers of Jesus, whose power was hidden on the cross, glimpsed in Jesus' new life or resurrection, and is now growing steadily in the world, despite the appearance of initial failure and repeated rejections of the church's ministry and message. Matthew, as well as Mark, uses the seed parables to define discipleship as hearing, accepting, and bearing fruit, following the way of Jesus that yields a bountiful harvest. Maybe, just maybe, we need to put ourselves in the story, perhaps as the seed, perhaps as the soil, perhaps as the sower, perhaps as the ears. Sometimes we can hear well, sometimes we can't. And I don't mean because we don't have our hearing aid switched on. Sometimes we can hear words and we just cannot take them in. Sometimes our soil is good, and other times it is in need of some nutrients. Maybe our soil has been so full it has nothing more to give at this particular moment. So we need to take time, whatever that time looks like, to put some nutrients back in our soil. Sometimes, as a seed, we may need to lay dormant for a while. We may need to just rest before we can enter into again. Sometimes, acceptance for growth is instant. Yes, let's do that. Other times, we may need to work through some doubt first. Nevertheless, we are all part of the harvest of following Jesus in whatever way we can be. So our rebranding could have many names: the parable of the careless sower, the miraculous harvest, the helpless, hapless seeds, or the good soil. No matter what name we choose at any particular time, or whenever we hear this story, no matter what space we are in, like Rebecca, we know that there is God. There is God, ever present, loving us just as we are, where we are, working for good through all things, encouraging us to create and build the realm of God. May this be so, thus uniting all that is divided. Amen.